Hi, this is Dr. William Renner. Thank you for joining us in this evidence-based podcast on wellness. I'm here with Dr. Alan Safdie, a highly recognized GI doctor, internist, and expert on nutrition. He's the previous president of the Ohio GI and Liver Institute. Dr. Safdie, let's talk about BMI and obesity. Why is BMI no longer a good measurement?
Well, Bill, all your doctors, for anybody listening to this, probably still use BMI, so I don't want to say it's not a good measurement. I just don't like it. I think it's broken. I don't think it's adequate for what we want us to look at, which is obesity around the abdominal area. So there was a recent study that was published, and by this recent study, 75% of adults in the United States are obese. That's huge. That's surprising. Even more surprising, about 40% of people with a normal BMI, and this is the scary part, had excess unhealthy fat. So, people, you go into the doctor's office, says your BMI is fine, it's 24, it's less than 25, less than or equal to 25, that's fine. It's not fine. If by the things we're going to discuss with you today are much more important, where is it fat? Bill, you can give the story on Michael Jordan, but what
Yeah, this is one of my favorites. Michael Jordan had
basketball player.
the basketball player, the great, great basketball player, had an abnormal or had a abnormal BMI. Now, was he obese?
No. I mean his waist was extremely narrow. The guy had muscles rippling over his whole body, a lot of professional football players.
Could jump
And
5 feet high.
basketball players, weightlifters, they don't have increased visceral fat or fat in the abdominal area. So BMI may not be, well, in my opinion, it isn't. It's missing these people of normal body weight that actually have unhealthy fat. So we have to rethink in how we define obesity and who's actually at risk, in my opinion. So BMI's body mass index, how do you calculate that? That's just the ratio of height to weight. It doesn't tell us what the weight's made of. It doesn't tell me, is that weight made of muscle or fat? Which is really what I want to know. It can't distinguish between muscle or fat. And if you are fat, it doesn't tell me where the fat is. So if the fat is intra-abdominal inside your belly around the organs, that's really risky. If the fat's in your arms and legs, not as risky. BMI fails. Why does it fail? It overestimates obesity, as Bill just mentioned, in muscular fit people. It way overestimates it.
So, what's a better test?
Well, a better test is we're going to do the height and weight. We're going to look at waist, but what else does BMI underestimate? It underestimates risk in people of normal weight. And it misses visceral fat, the fat that I just mentioned around the area. So a better test, as you just mentioned, is waist to height ratios. So a simple rule, say you're, Bill, you 70 inches tall, somewhere around there.
Somewhere.
So your waist should be less than 0.5 of that. So your waist should be 35 inches or less. Or if your waist is greater than that, say it's 37 or 38 or 42, then you have a higher cardiometabolic risk because it tells me where is the fat. It captures the visceral fat, the fat around the organs, the fat that's intra-abdominal, and it works across sexes and ethnicities. And it's a better predictor of disease than body mass index. So in the new analysis I mentioned before, maybe 75%, maybe even 80% of US adults had elevated waist to height ratios. Which means, only one out of five people you pass on the street isn't obese by these or overweight by these new measurements.
So, what diseases does obesity actually increase?
I forgot to mention one thing is that, remember about 40% of patients with a normal BMI less than 25 still had obesity by body fat measurements. And, 80% of people with BMIs 25 to 30, and then almost 100% of people with a BMI greater than 30 had obesity based upon that. So what are the diseases? Good question, Bill. The obvious ones, it's a multi-organ disease. It's not just one organ. Cardiometabolic, meaning diabetes, high blood pressure, heart attacks, it puts you at risk for all those strokes, heart failure, vascular dementia. So there's a lot of over 100 types of dementia that we've talked about previously, but vascular dementia, meaning the blood vessels that supply your brain are getting impacted and they're not functioning as they should. So that's one of the major ones, but just below Alzheimer's, risk for dementia, strokes, depression. Over time, your brain volume's less. So respiratory, if you hit obese, you have more sleep apnea, you have more obesity. Cancer, obesity in my field definitely increases risk of colon cancer, postmenopausal breast cancer, my field again, pancreatic cancer and endometrial cancer. Again, a lot of these are in my field, liver cancer, esophageal
Right.
cancer.
And metabolic syndrome. Why don't you talk about metabolic syndrome too?
So it's a variety of things that you have. Insulin resistance. So you would have, we look at your lipids, we look at your blood pressure, we look at, whether you have obesity based upon our new criteria that I'm using rather than just the BMI. So if you have hyperlipidemia, meaning high lipid panels, if you have type 2 diabetes or even elevated hemoglobin A1C, why are we looking for this metabolic profile? Because we want to remove one of these risk factors, which is fatty liver. Fats, depositing in the liver that can cause damage over time.
Now, fatty liver, surprisingly, has overtaken, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, fatty liver has overtaken cirrhosis. I mean, it can lead to, is the most common cause of cirrhosis, where alcohol used to be. Is that correct?
Well, there's two things that used to be prominent: alcoholic liver disease and viruses. So we have reasonable good treatments for very good treatments for hepatitis C right now. We don't have very good, but we have treatments for hepatitis B. So we have a lot less hepatitis patients that require liver transplantation and a lot more patients that have significant destruction of liver cells from what we this fatty liver diseases are non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, and then there's new, now we have a MASH rather than NASH. We call it different names all the time, but it's basically fat that's destroying liver cells. And why does this visceral fat around your organs, around your liver, around your pancreas, around your heart, it drives insulin resistance at the heart of this. It raises inflammation, it disrupts and messes up your hormones, and it accelerates aging. So you may be thin on the outside, metabolically, you may be unhealthy on the inside.
Yeah, that brings up the important medicines, Ozempic and other GLP-1 medicines. But let's talk about that in another discussion, because that's in itself is a very very important talk.
Yeah, we can talk about GLP-1s ones, these ones, whether it be Wegovy or Zepbound or any of these, what they do and what they don't do. It's not just what they do, but what they don't do. Right now, if you just watch the news, you'll think they do everything. They do a lot. I'm very impressed by them, but there's certain things they don't do. So thank you again, Bill.
All right. Stay tuned for our next discussion.